Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. A 36-year-old single pre-K teacher and would-be poet fantasizes about having a rich man's baby. A heroin addict schemes to write a children's book on boxer Marvelous Marvin Hagler, thinking the word count for kids' books is small and he'd get paid more quickly. The daughter of a Holocaust survivor struggles with an addiction to crack and takes in a recovering neo-Nazi. A memoirist realizes the public no longer wants to hear about his misery. These are just a few of the hapless, feckless, and ultimately hysterical inhabitants of The Fun Parts, a collection of stories by Sam Lipsight. His best-selling book, The Ask, helped firmly establish Sam Lipsight as one of our premier contemporary satirists. And we're so glad to have him with us. Sam Lipsight, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thanks, Virginia.
Now, you had the enormous success with your novel, The Ask, and then came this collection of short stories, now out in paperback. I wonder if it was kind of a breather to write short stories after a novel.
Well, I wouldn't say it was a breather, because those stories took as much out of me as the novel.
No walk in the park?
No, it's never a walk in the park. More like a crawl through the ditch. It was nice to change up, and I started with short stories, and I was happy to get the chance to try them again.
And they're sort of linked together. At least some of the characters do reappear. I'm thinking of Tova.
Yes.
She's a poet-turned-school teacher. We meet her in the first story, The Climbing Room. She turns maybe into a girlfriend of an old lecherous guy, at least in her fantasy. I wonder if maybe there were makings of the novels for some of these stories.
Well, I was excited about getting to revisit Tova in another story. And, I like when my stories and even my novels overlap with characters or towns or a few situations. And it kind of keeps things alive for me in a way.
The Climber Room is set in the present, as far as I can tell, whereas the other story that she is in the past, and it's really not her story.
Right.
Clinton has just been re-elected, we learned, so it's somewhere in the middle of the 90s.
There's a little time stamp in the story when I say that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And she's a very different person, a much more pretentious person, because she's had a chapbook out of poetry. There is this sense of the kind of pretension of the artist, and I wonder if that is something you get to confront a fair bit living there in Manhattan.
Well, perhaps there's a greater share of that here than in some other places, but I think it's not something I condemn in young people. I think it's a part of youth and part of wanting to be an artist and part of that desire. I just was interested in watching Tova move from that, and it's kind of sad because she may be pretentious, but she's also confident and she's writing poetry.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, those things kind of go together.
You know, a lot of people in this book are troubled. We're all a little bit broken. I mean, are we, Sam Lipsight? Is that the way you see us?
Well, yes, but it's not a doomsday scenario. I think it helps when we acknowledge our flaws and our mistakes and our sorrows, and then we try to endure.
But you do seem to have a kind of affection or tenderness for the
broken. Well, absolutely. I think a writer I always liked named Harry Cruse said, you know, all fiction should be about the crushing of the human heart. And because that's what we all go through at different times in our life. And I don't think it's negative or dark to say so. It's just an acknowledgement, and then we go on and see what we can salvage.
Well, we don't just have the broken and deluded, but there are also the climbers. There are so many details I loved about these climbers. You know, children named Desdemona or Prague.
Right.
A home described as inspiring aspirational sconce porn.
Oh, yeah.
So there's an equal measure of looking, I guess, through the sides of your eyes at those on the top rung of the social ladder as the bottom.
Yes, and also the way we look at that top rung.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a lot of what I'm interested in getting to is that gap between what we want and what we get, what we think we're going to get, all of that. It's in that area is where I think the all the desire and fear is, and all the heartbreak and the attempts to put it back together.
We also meet people who get ridiculed. There are two stories that I'm thinking of here about Lonesome Boys. The Dungeon Master is about a group of kids who play Dungeons & Dragons together because they're rejected even from the school's Dungeons & Dragon Club.
Yeah, that's a major indignity. they're not good enough for the school's Dungeons & Dragons Club.
There's also an ode to Old Corn. This is the fattest kid in the school. He wants to remake himself as a shot putter. Both of them made me feel very sad and lonely and made me wonder about you growing up. I mean, is that just normal, lonesome adolescent stuff, or did you have an especially lonesome childhood?
I think that when you're a kid, you can't imagine anyone feeling more lonesome than you do. Hmm. But I don't think it was, I think it was pretty garden variety adolescence. We're so sensitive at that time. And the world is full of pain and wonder at that time. We feel things so intensely. And I'm a teacher and I teach creative writing. And sometimes students hand in a story that's about a breakup and they're 19 or 20. And it's filled with all of this incredible emotion. And on the one hand, I think, well, they don't get that this is just a college romance and it'll pass and time will heal. But then I also think, you know, this is when people feel the most in some ways. Mm. And I have to respect that, too.
We're talking with Sam Lipsight. He has a very funny collection of short stories called The Fun Parts is now out in paperback. Sam, there are also plenty of people who are grown up and I guess should know better, but of course we don't. The lies that we tell ourselves, I think, is another theme that runs through here. I'm thinking of Mandy. She's the daughter of a Holocaust survivor who hooks up with a neo-Nazi who's trying to change his ways. She does get together with him and thinks, when he's a little more stable, I'll break up with him. This illusion, this illusion of control. And she's in recovery. And you do a pretty close observation of Manhattan recovery group weirdness, you call it. I wonder how you got the insight on this, what is considered a sort of secret society.
Well, it's not so secret anymore. I think it's represented quite a bit on television and in novels and the nonfiction, but I've written about it in the past. When I was younger, I had my problems and observed lots of environments, including jail cells and so forth. So I think we all kind of relate to some sort of obsessional or compulsive behavior, some addictive traits, some ways in which we feel almost possessed. I think. I don't think that's just about a drug or just about a drink. I think that's about a lot of things and a lot of dynamics and a lot of relationships between people.
Yeah, I guess so. We can all be relief-seeking missiles.
Yeah, I like that.
In our own way. Well, I wonder for you, Sam, you know, you've written so many funny, bitingly funny books, great satire and novels and short stories. Do you ever think about, I'm going to write something and it's just not going to be funny at all? I mean, I'm going to leave all humor out of it. Is that something you're even capable of?
Well, I think I've had moments where I thought, well, if I just kept it really flat and there wasn't any play in the language and it wasn't, the scenes weren't comic, you know, I'd probably sell more books on the international market or something. But I've come to realize that I'm a certain kind of writer. I don't really get middling reviews. I get savage attacks or really big raves. And I just hear from a lot of people who care about what I'm doing, and that inspires me. And at a certain point, you realize who you are and what you're doing. I was, the writer Thomas McGuane,
mm-hmm.
And I was recently on a panel with him, and he's a hero of mine, and It was a thrill just to be there with him. But he was talking a bit about you write comic novels don't win prizes, but in a way they end up being incredibly important to people. So you just got to be happy with that.
I wonder why that is. That sort of, there's nothing, I don't know, lukewarm about what you do. You either incite the passionate love or attacks.
I assume that's a good thing. I mean, sometimes, I really don't mind those attacks you know, because at least I feel like I riled somebody up.
Hmm.
At least somebody felt something.
Do your kids think you're funny?
No, not at all. And my son thinks he's, you know, God's gift to comedy and thinks I'm Dreck. So,
well, I guess there are some critics you just cannot win over.
Right.
Well, Sam Lipsight, I really want to thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Virginia.
Sam Lipsight's very funny collection of short stories is The Fun Parts, and it's now out in paperback. You'll find more on the book and his other work, including the best-selling novel The Ask and Others, at wordofmouthradio.org. Up next, a blogger who reports from his parents' home in Philly, who's become a Vatican insider. We'll talk with him about Francis's shake-em-up papacy and how he became the go-to guy for insider stories. That's when Word of Mouth continues.